Item number five, oral presentations. 5A, Salinas Valley Groundwater Sustainable Agency Coordination with Seaside Groundwater Basin on Issues of Mutual Interest.
Good afternoon, members of the Seaside Water Master Board. Thank you for inviting us to speak with you here today. I am joined by my colleague, Brett Harmon, who is the general manager of the Salinas Valley Basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency. And we are going to give this presentation together. Brett is here remotely. So I'm going to share my slides. And welcome Brett to introduce this item. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Okay, well, good afternoon, Board of Directors. It's my pleasure to be in front of you, unfortunately, in my 2D format. I'm sorry I'm not there in person, but we are tag teaming with Sarah, and she's there to answer any questions. So I just want to introduce the GSA, SPV-GSA. I think it's one of the longest acronyms. We love acronyms in the water world. And so it's the Salinas Valley Basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency. We are the most junior, I'm going to say, in the amongst the agencies, public agencies that are managing water in Monterey County. We were born after that 2014 Act, a Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, was enacted. So the act itself is 10 years old. I actually just received a invitation from Department of Water Resources because they're celebrating that milestone in a couple of weeks here. But that gave birth, if you will, to the GSAs, Groundwater Sustainability Agencies, all across the state and in this region. With Salinas Valley Groundwater Basin, the determination was made to create a JPA, Joint Powers Authority, and a new agency. And I know it's a little confusing, or a lot confusing, to many constituents and stakeholders. Why do we have this many agencies that are all kind of seemingly doing the same thing? So we are trying to add value. It's not the mission or purpose or goal of our agency to add redundancies and more work and more bureaucracy. So we are truly the, I call us the convener and collaborator. We want to work with all other agencies that are responsible for water resources in this region and engage stakeholders and build strong alliances. We have six sub-basins. There's a slide later that actually shows us on the map. And one of them is called by DWR, critically overdrafted. It's the 18400-foot aquifer sub-basin. So the plan, groundwater sustainability plan, for that basin was due early in January 2020, and the other five sub-basins 2022. So we got all of them done, and I proudly have to report that they, all six plans, got approved by DWR. Many did not in the whole state, so my predecessors did an excellent job of relying on stakeholder outreach and developing plans that were acceptable by local constituents, but also by the state. It could kind of feel like the work is done, we have the plans, but actually the work just starts. The main focus now is on implementation of the GSPs. And there's one chapter or section in all of those plans that is called PMAs, another acronym. It stands for Projects and Management Actions. So it's a long list of potential ideas that could be constructed or implemented in any given basin to get us to sustainability. State has given us 20 years. So it's 2020 for 18400 and 2042 to reach that sustainability. We have to consider six sustainability indicators. And so, you know, for us, that's what we do every day, so it seems very logical. So I'm going to just quickly count them. It's the groundwater levels is, of course, one of the most obvious ones. One is groundwater in storage is another indicator. Seawater intrusion, very applicable in this region in one sub-basin specifically, but somewhat of a challenge or potential concern in the neighboring sub-basins as well. Then we have subsidence that we have not, it has not been noticed in this basin yet, and hopefully we can stay away from that. And then two that are a little bit harder, one is groundwater quality. It kind of has its own specifics, what is considered under that indicator. And then we also have to consider interconnected surface waters. So those are the six big buckets we need to be looking at when considering sustainability. So already mentioned the six sub-basins. You can see on the map, the largest one is Upper Valley in the southern part of the county. And this is one that we actually, it got expanded from what Water Resources Agency has been tracking in terms of water levels and water use. So that's a new area for us. We have a lot of data gaps there, and we need to kind of make sure we fill those, we understand better what's going on in that part. But then Four Bay in the middle there, and then the four up in the northern part of the county, 18400, Langley, Eastside, and then Monterey. We're not alone. We're not the only GSA in Monterey County, and we are partnering with three others. Rem is here today and is going to be presenting shortly afterwards. Marina Coast Water District in Monterey Sub-Basin. Rio Seco is in Four Bay Aquifer and County of Monterey, very small area in this northern part. And we were very fortunate to get grants from DWR to implement the GSPs. It is, Sigma was called from get-go, an unfunded mandate, but there were some funding pools identified by the state and we applied. So it's quite a bit of money. It's combined over 20 million that we are using to either fill data gaps, understand the conditions better, do feasibility studies, and Sarah will be talking about specific ones more relevant for this area. The first round one grant, it is to be completed in this coming spring, and we have a report that gets generated. It's on a staff level as a what have we learned, the feasibility studies, what we've done, how do we compare them, how do we build a path forward from those feasibility studies. So we have spent about $7 million already, but the rest of it, $14 million, a little change there. The work just started earlier this year, and it's moving very, very fast. By spring of 2026, we need to have this work done. One of those grants is a shared grant with Marina Coast Water District GSA, and the other one is we were the applicant, and we will be. The main focus is on the four sub-basins to advance the Sigma goals. So Sarah, I think that's, I have one more here. So kind of illustrative for, you may not need it because you're working on groundwater management as well, but for most people, just kind of make it very clear why do we need it. There is a concept called water budget, so very similar to financial budgets. There's inflows and outflows, and kind of very naturally, if the outflows or expenses are higher than inflows or recharge, then there's imbalance, and it's a bad thing. We do not want to be in a budget deficit. Over the long term, we cannot afford for the groundwater to be in deficit either. So that's in many parts of the basin, not in all. There is overdrafted groundwater basin, and we need to be finding a solution for how to get the water balance in balance. Plus the seawall intrusion, that is a very complicated problem. It does happen when seawater, when groundwater levels decline, but it's much harder to quantify and it's definitely harder to mitigate. So I think that is a perfect segue into Sarah's next slide.
Thank you, Ms. Harmon. So I'm going to take it from here, and just very briefly. So I'm the lead staff person for the Monterey sub-basin and the 18400 foot aquifer sub-basin. I also have a long history with the Water Master. I was here with this board in the very first 2 years of implementation after the adjudication, so I actually attended part of the trial. So I've got that background. And seawater intrusion, of course, was one of the issues that led to the adjudication, and it is one of the major issues that we're needing to address in both the Monterey sub-basin and the 18400. And as an overarching sort of statement, Monterey County Water Resources Agency has implemented a number of projects going back to the 1940s with the construction of the reservoirs, which were all intended to help address seawater intrusion, and we've been experiencing it for that long in Monterey County. But it hasn't completely slowed or stopped the inland progression of seawater intrusion. And we've seen some recent impacts to wells in the Castroville community and other areas are at risk. And the deep aquifers is another water source that that we see more drilling into the deep aquifers as seawater intrusion has occurred in the 400-foot aquifer outside of areas that are served by projects. So we currently have three feasibility studies underway that are using the grant funds that Perrette referred to, looking at different projects and demand management as an approach to how we address seawater intrusion. So wanted to just have that as sort of a high level statement, because I know that that's something that is of concern to the Water Masters, considering the risks and evaluating the risks of seawater intrusion coming into the Seaside Subbasin. And I will just add that the Seaside Subbasin technically is part of the Salinas Valley Basin under the state's Bulletin 118 definition of the Salinas Valley Basin. So we see several areas for coordination with the Water Master. I'm going to speak to each of these in the next slides. In the Laguna Seca sub-area of your basin, that's where we share a boundary with the Monterey sub-basin on the eastern and southern side of the Monterey sub-basin, and Mr. Scherzinger will speak to the other boundary more in the coastal area. In the Laguna Seca area, there are some unique conditions. We have the Water Master's model. A groundwater model has always shown water flowing out towards the Corral de Tierra area. We have some more recent modeling that has been done and new models that have been developed that is an area that we're going to need to continue to study jointly in terms of how pumping is affecting the two different sub-basins. And areas where we could work together is in collection of data and monitoring, and also considering ways to use water more efficiently in both the Laguna Seca sub-area and what we refer to as the Corral de Tierra area of the Monterey sub-basin. Back to seawater intrusion, we have developed a model that is specific for evaluation of seawater intrusion, different from the groundwater flow models that the Water Master has. This is a model that has a variable density component that can track particles of chloride and how they move through the aquifers and the changes in chloride concentrations in the groundwater. And we've been working really closely with Marina Coast Water District to refine the model with additional data that they have. It is a tool that could be used by the Water Master, and I believe that's something that Mr. Jakes is bringing to you for consideration. I wanted to share with you a couple of slides that show the no project scenario. So what happens if we do nothing? And on the left-hand side, that we're seeing the existing seawater intrusion in the 180-foot aquifer. This is how the model is simulating on the right how seawater intrusion would continue to progress inland over the next 50 years, while advancing well into the city of Salinas. But I would note that it is not showing seawater intrusion moving into the Seaside Basin. So that's a good news takeaway for you all. In the 400-foot aquifer, we see a similar story of continued inland progression of the seawater intrusion front. And on the right-hand side, where you see this weird little arm kind of sticking out, that is the model simulating the potential for leakage of seawater intrusion from the 180-foot aquifer down into the 400-foot aquifer. However, the model in that area will be improved in the future with better information on where the wells are screened. So we want to be clear that we don't have certainty that will happen, but it could happen, and it is certainly a risk. The 400-foot aquifer is by far the greatest aquifer used in this region. Another feature of the seawater intrusion model is that it shows how groundwater levels will change. And in the 180-foot aquifer, which we're seeing on the left-hand side, you'll see that in the coastal areas, there's not a huge decline in groundwater levels. But that is primarily because most pumping in the 180-foot aquifer has already stopped. With the implementation of the Castroville Seawater Intrusion Project, many wells in the 180-foot aquifer were destroyed, and so we don't have as much ongoing pumping in that area. In the 400-foot aquifer, we do see additional declines, and especially in the southern reaches of the sub-basin, or the model area, take that back. And then another sort of major topic that is relevant and important for the Seaside Basin is the deep aquifers. The deep aquifers are present in the Seaside Subbasin. They are the aquifer where injection is occurring through the Carmel River ASR and the Pure Water Monterey projects. It is a very important resource to the Seaside Basin. We've recently completed the deep aquifer study, and that study, which is the delineation of the area of the deep aquifers, is what's being shown on the right, as well as where we are seeing both urban and agricultural pumping in the deep aquifers. And the study identifies three areas of the deep aquifers and recommends slightly different management considerations or guidance for how those areas are managed. And the Seaside region is separately delineated. I would note here that the deep aquifer extent does not cover the entirety of the Seaside Basin. It's really more of that shared hydrogeology, geologic characteristics as we see in the Monterey subbasin. And the way that water flows between the coastal area in the darker orange and the Seaside Basin in the lighter orange can really move slightly depending on the pumping regime. It's not a definitive line, it's an illustrative line of where there's a groundwater flow divide. So with that, I'm going to conclude our portion of, this agenda item. And again, we really thank you for the opportunity to share the information. We'd be happy to share additional information as we move forward with our feasibility studies and projects. And we were glad to welcome Mr. Jakes to the Monterey Subbasin Committee. So with that, I'll conclude, unless you have any questions.
Thank you so much. Are there any questions? Just have Director Barber.
Yes, thank you so much for the presentation. Just had a question about the three feasibility studies that's addressing the seawater intrusion. Is there a time or timeline for when that would be completed?
Yes, so these are feasibility studies that we're doing as part of the grant we have for the 180-400 foot aquifer. And so we're in the, we have administrative drafts. They will be produced this year. And so we're on a short timeline for having the two project feasibility studies completed in the next couple of months. On the demand management feasibility, that's a larger, longer process because we are looking at opportunities to reduce demands across the entire Salinas Valley Basin. And so that's something that's going to need to be considered by our board following a longer process than our current grant timeline.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, of course. Director Riley.
On the previous chart on the deep aquifer, you show in your code the size of the bullet means the volume. The volume is annual. I mean, that's the latest information you have, but it's an annual number. Is that right?
Yes, that's an acre foot per year.
Anyone else? And thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Next we have Marina Coast.
Chair, members of the Water Master, Rem Scherzinger again, Marine Coast Water District General Manager. It's my pleasure to address the Water Master as it relates to RGSA and the district itself. Again, a hard act to follow. It's a SVBGSA is a fantastic partner for us, and I think we're working really well together. So it kind of speaks to how we want to work with the Water Master itself. So the district, just a quick overview of our presentation today, the district itself, the GSA, the basins we operate in, and then some funding and projects that we have underway. And so kind of to give the Water Master an idea of where we're at and what we're up to. So MCWD, for those of you who don't know, Marina Coast Water District, we're an independent special district. We're a county water agency, actually. We're actually two different legal entities, so we're the county water agency, but we're also at the GSA. The GSA itself operates in two basins, so we operate in the Monterey Subbasin and in the 180-400. So we have plans in both, and we have agreements with Salinas Valley Basin to do that. The district itself, we serve 10 land use jurisdictions, so four cities, two federal entities, two the state of California, Monterey County, and then two universities. So inside that space, the organization itself, we're approximately a $71 million organization with a $400 million capital improvement plan. We serve 41,000 customers. And our water rights package really hinges on three different things. So our groundwater rights, roughly 11,000. Our recycled water rights, right at 3,700. And then our desal plant, which is in refit right now, is 300 acre feet. The GSA, more to today's meeting, our GSA right now is an annual operating of about $1.33 million. Our 25 CIP is right around $600,000, and our five-year CIP is $25 million, currently grant-funded at $1.26 million. So the GSA, we were formed in 2017. Our GSPs, as previously mentioned, were approved in 2020, 21. And in 2023, and we have modeling ongoing. And as you guys know, These models are being perfected over and over and over as we go through iteration and iteration. And I think some of our conversation with Bob was how to bring our modelers, EKI, into the circle with Montgomery and to bring the work that we're doing with Montgomery on the other side so that we have a cohesive model along the edge, and we are 100% on board with that concept. So the Groundwater Sustainability Agency, so predominantly we operate inside the Monterey Subbasin. That's 48.2 square miles. We're working with Salinas Valley Groundwater Sustainability Agency, which borders to our north and to our east. We operate, SVPA GSA is managing the 18400 in coordination with the with our GSA, and then developing those we manage and coordinate those basins together. The subbasin, Monterey Subbasin, is divided into two management areas, very much like some of the work you guys are doing in the Seaside Basin. We have the Corral de Tierra area and the Marina Ord area. Salinas Valley Basin has graciously taken on the Corral de Tierra area. So looking forward to working with them and supporting them to the success of that basin. So as everybody knows and was pointed out earlier, there's six components to the Sigma that we're trying to achieve, right? We're trying to stop the lowering groundwater levels. We're trying to prevent the reduction in groundwater storage, seawater intrusion, groundwater water quality degradation, and land subsidence, and the depletion of interconnected surface water. So these are the things that are driving the GSAs that we're operating. So our GSA is interacting with by operating two controlling agreements with Salinas Valley Basin, which is connected via Monterey County. So we have our GSA steering committee, which we reactivated last year, really. And I have to say, over the last essentially year and a half, it's been a really great opportunity for our electeds and their electeds to talk, to bring together our technical information, hash it all out, and then go back to our member agencies or our agencies and then bring that information forward so that we could all move together. It's been really great. So again, that provides collaborative data management and modeling with EKI and Montgomery. So it's a place where we can bring those folks in, they can all talk, we can hear what they're doing, understand what they're doing, and then send them out to go do some more. Just quickly, so our Prop 68 Round 2 implementation grant, $6.5 million. Here, the Monterey Subbasin data expansion and Sigma compliance, that's roughly $5 million. Engagement with interested parties, $500,000. Project update report, $7.25 million. Grant administration, almost $7 million. So a lot of money is moving into this space. It's interesting that what we were doing a couple years ago with integrated regional water management planning, or WIMPs, all that money kind of drained out of those things and kind of ran over to Sigma. So what we were doing for a decade, trying to figure out what we were doing water-wise, kind of evaporated and became this at the state level. So just really quickly, the groundwater and surface water are interrelated in the Salinas Basin. I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know, but the valley itself, we don't import water from anywhere outside, so we're a basin-driven system. We can't get water from anyone. All the water in our system comes from rainfall. The valley relies on both surface and groundwater storage sources. These are Nacimiento and San Antonio, which are very important to Marina Coast, but also the groundwater basins that live with underneath, and that's one of the reasons why we're a member of CSIP and why all of the property within ours are within the district are in the CSIP zone. That covenant is to produce roughly 30,000 acre feet of groundwater. And then continue pumping your groundwater has direct impacts on the basin, right? If the only way in is through rain, the other way out is through pumping. So here, the primary undesirable resort as a result of lowering groundwater levels. It's really interesting to me, this graph, so this comes from MCWRA in 2018, is that these yellow areas, these are droughts, and we can see how the groundwater basin recovers really quickly when a little bit of rain gets on the ground. So this helps us understand how productive these groundwater basins are. But because they're so productive, right, we have a multi-billion dollar ag industry, which we need to protect. But there are opportunities in this recharge fact. A little bit of water on the ground goes a long way, I guess, is the short answer to that. This is pumping and the number of wells reporting extraction from 1995 to 2023. I find this one interesting because CSIP comes online and the basin reacts really well. And it isn't until we continue, we put more wells into the basin, that the basin starts to have to produce more and starts to struggle. So the original concept, the CSIP concept, was right, but it created additional demand, which it wasn't designed to deal with. So something for us to ponder and something for us to try to address. Mm-hmm. Seawater intrusion already covered by my colleagues, this is the undesirable result. This is where we think the aquifers are headed and what we're trying to preclude. And so anything that continues this is something we need to address. I do want to point out the lobe in the 400. So you see out towards Salinas, there's the kind of pinkish lobe. We believe that that's water dropping out of the 180 and into the 400. That's why that island of seawater was created. So it means that the barrier is not impermeable, it is permeable. So we have to be very careful as that water moves towards Salinas. Yeah.
Question on that, that 180 is salinated and it is now also then contaminating 400.
We believe that, yes. So that as that upper lens traveled across,
yes,
it found a hole in the aquitard and moved down into the 400.
And do we think it's natural, or do we think that's because there's wells?
Yes.
Right.
I think it's a little bit of both, but it's so big that it would have to be some kind of geologic situation.
Okay.
So just for a sense of size, so this data set also comes from WRA. So this is 2020 showing groundwater extraction for rural domestic. So this is just homes, wells. Urban domestic, so that's roughly 30,000 acre feet going to urban suppliers. And then ag drawing off 172,000. So ag is the largest single consumer of water out of the Salinas Basin itself, with the total being drawn out of the basin at 228,000. Now recycled water is picking up. We're doing more in that space, and thank you to Cal-Am and M1 Water, our partner in delivering pure water Monterey and Monterey Peninsula. And surface water clearly has additional capacity, right? We have 500,000 acre feet sitting in reservoirs and we're only utilizing 14,000 here. So definitely an area of opportunity. And we're working right now with WRA and Salinas Valley Basin to add to that number, I guess that's the best way to say that. So Marina Coast projects. Really quickly, we're starting to prepare for our indirect potable reuse projects. We have three of them slated. Our first one will be at Sand Tank, roughly at the corner of California Imogen. Our phase two project, so following Pure Water Monterey expansion, Marina Coast will then begin to develop the Pure Water Monterey phase two, which was thought about when we did Pure Water Monterey phase one, I guess. Our weather station network. So we have brought a three-station weather network online. This is a way for us to truth the rainfall on the system, on the ground, and how our aquifers recover as it relates to that rain. So that, coupled with our monitoring well network, which is now, I guess you would say, fully up and running, we're now monitoring the wells in real time, so we can watch rain move over our basin, watch the recharge in real time, and watch our wells as those wells affect the aquifer in real time. And it is really cool. We can see the wells shut down, we can see the aquifer recover, we can see now the first sets of rains and how that rain is moving across our surface and where those recharge zones are. And hopefully as we move along in time, we'll be able to utilize those recharge zones to more effect. Meaning, if we know that this area of the headlands has greater production potential, we can drop more water there by using Pure Water Monterey or recycled water to do surface water and surface water stilling, which will recharge those basins. So we're really excited about that. Armstrong Ranch brine pilot facility. So we're currently working with UC Berkeley and the Berkeley Labs and NAWI, the National Alliance for Water Innovation, to develop a brine pilot facility. So right now, the only place where you can test RO units is in Alamogordo, New Mexico. And there's a 2 to 5 year waiting list to get into the facility to run your PhD package, whatever it is. So we have reached out to the state to say, hey, look, we have a well on Armstrong Ranch that produces brine. We're gonna build a building and we're gonna put power on it. And you can come in and land a unit and run it, and we'll help you figure out whether or not it works. So we're really excited about that. And then, like all things, demand management activities are, it's not going in, you can't take it out, right? So we'll have to figure that part out. So future water supply, conservation and efficiencies, everybody knows that's an easy